We are on episode 7 of season 15 of Mention and Dispatches. So we are now past our halfway point, and the season is rumbling on. So Mike is back with me. Mike, how you doing, man?
Doing good. Doing good. Glad to be back.
Glad you're here. You've only missed like one or two of this whole season. I mean, you've been here for most of them at this point.
I know. I finally figured out that when you have important, really important people on, you don't invite me. So no offense, that's not Jim, true. But I don't know.
That is so not true.
Because I can't beat Jim here.
We had Keith Tracton, and he was totally not important, and we invited you. So
that's true. That's true.
Yeah. Keith, we love you. Tonight's guest is a gentleman that we've never had on Mention and Dispatches. But again, going back to this season, we are leaning a little harder into talking to designers. Mr. James Day was the winner of, well, not him, that's him and his co-designer, their game, Panzer North Africa, won the Charles S. Roberts Award last year for the War Game of the Year, but also a couple of the other subcategories. You can go back and listen to our episode on the Charlies to hear more about that. But we thought we'd invite Mr. Day to come join us, and he has graciously agreed to do so. So welcome, Mr. Jim, sir.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Hey, appreciate you being here. It's for the audience. It's a little fun. I knew that Jim had lived up in the D.C. area, and so I'd reached out and say, hey, we got this fall assembly thing coming up. Maybe you want to come check it out. And he wrote me back and said it's a long drive from Ohio, because I didn't realize you'd moved back to Ohio.
Yeah, we moved back a couple of years ago, and so that's where we're originally from in Northwest Ohio.
Yeah, which just means that now Gary and I are going to hit you up to come join us at Buckeye Game Fest or Origins down in Columbus and come hang out with the Wargamers down there instead of down here in North Carolina with me and Mike. Looking back over the track record, one of the things that jumps out for me from your catalog is, man, you like use some tanks.
I have done some tanks, yes.
Yes.
A few here and there.
So was there a professional interest that got you, you know, interested in the tanks? Was it just, hey, those things look really cool on camera? Was it a chance to like climb around and play on some? Did you lose a bet? Like, how did we end up with so many games on tanks in the catalog?
Well, actually, when I first started in gaming, my interest was in naval, in 20th century naval. And but back in those days, naval opportunities were pretty well limited to playing with big miniatures on a basketball court. So it really didn't lend itself very well to certainly playing games at your house or even with a limited number of people. So I sort of transitioned into what would seem a near interest area, and that was tanks, which was quarter-flag ships on land. And that's kind of how I transitioned from my interest. I still like naval a great deal, but getting more into tanks, it offered a much broader opportunity than just looking at naval.
Yeah, yeah. I know Iron and Oak was in your catalog. I'm struggling to think of additional naval ones, but in part because I'm not a naval war gamer. I'm a tanker. So, you know.
Also, I did the Kaiser's Pirates, but that's that was World War One Raider. But that's a card-based game, so it wasn't on a game board specifically.
Gotcha.
So I really like looking at topics that, you know, although there's lots of tank games out there, but some topics that haven't been done, you know, 1,000 times already. And so certainly Civil War naval, there's not a lot of games out there. And on a tactical level. And Raiders in War One hadn't been done a great deal. So that's where I had, you know, interest in that area also. But tanks, I've certainly done a fair number of tank encounters in War Two and post MBT, you know, hypothetical 1987.
Yeah, yeah. And I think MBT was probably the first of your designs that I had ever encountered. It was one that I'd played some, my younger days. And I spent time as a tanker in the military. And so it's not because of MBT, but there were plenty of those sorts of games that were formative for me along the way. And I had actually at one point used a simplified version of MBT with my tank platoon, just for some basic tactics training, just going over some stuff with the guys that I had to simplify it. I had non-gamers in the platoon, so we clearly had to strip some things down because we were a little more focused on, okay, how do the tactics work? But being able to use the counters on that map and to have the hexagons to help control the facing and to do some of the basic fire tables that are included there. We did modify some things to where, for training purposes, for instance, I made the guys give the proper fire command for the thing that they were looking at on the map. So that's not something that you would have ever put in a commercial game, but it was something that we grafted on for training purposes.
So you were, at that time, were dealing with the Avalon Hill version, correct?
Yes. Yeah, it was. And at one point, I actually had two copies of it, and because I had one that was unpunched, and was trying to keep it that way while I had my playing copy also. What I think happened is in one of our moves, because I grew up in the military, I think in one of our moves, Mom saw we had two, didn't think we needed two, and so one of them went to, like, on post thrift store or something. So thanks, Mom.
Well, moms are always thinking like that.
Going back through some of the catalog that you've got with MBT and then IDF as well, sort of, you know, not too long afterwards, as you're poking through some of the research on these things, obviously, like, you're working in an unclassified world, because if it's classified, we're not seeing it on Board Game Geek, right? But what sorts of sources were you able to get at the time, not just for the Western vehicles, but for the Warsaw Pact vehicles? And you know, how did you gauge the reliability of that information? How was it that that you kind of developed what you had in the game, given that there was limited knowledge of what was available at the time?
Well, yeah, there was a lot of research involved. And if you're going to focus on, say, one particular source area, that would be James and derivatives from James. When I first started researching the information, it's the amount available, especially online, is nowhere near comparable to what it is today. There's far more online sources available today than there were when I started my initial research on the topic. So it really came down to a certain trust factor, and I really felt the information in James was as accurate as it was going to be.
Yeah.
You could get without, you know, like you say, you're not looking at classified information or necessarily any, which you would call real world data, but it's as close as it needs to be from a gaming standpoint, because you're trying to create a game environment. You're not looking to duplicate any real world things, thankfully. And so it was really, going through a lot of that data, and actually, you know, you tend to find more information about the Warsaw Pact than you would about the Western.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, they would have this they captured, or they had this or that, and you know, there really wasn't a great deal of reluctance to publish information about the Warsaw Pact as it would be, because you're not, obviously, you're not giving up anything that's classified.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you start comparing things, you know, it's a matter of creating something that feels right, I guess would be the way you'd want to say it. And so there was, you know, trial and error and using this, using that. And I always felt good that I tended to receive a lot of compliments where people would come in, and even like yourself, the actuals that would say, you know, that's, that looks pretty good and that works pretty well. And I always have prided myself in trying to accurately research information. Because, you know, you notice in my games, there aren't, 100 different coming out every year. So it takes time. And it takes time to, I feel, come up with something that's accurate. But it's still a game, so you want something that's also fun. People are playing these because they're games. I mean, you're not doing real world training like you were doing with members of your unit. So, and I always wanted to have something that was pretty solid before I ever went to the publisher with anything. So it took a fair amount of research, and it's actually easier today. There's more information out there. I think from an accuracy standpoint, GMT's MBT is probably a little more accurate than the Avalon Hill version of the game, even though I have simplified a few things to make it more playable as a game in today's world. But when I actually first started on the tank stuff, it was more the modern than you'll see. World War II, even though the World War II, you could say, came out first. When I was approached by Yaquinto to do the original Panzer,
yep,
they wanted a World War II game. They didn't want a near modern game. So that's where I went back to the drawing board and came up more, as you see, Panzer than I did with MBT.
Yeah, World War II always sells, doesn't it?
Yes, it did. And especially World War II North Africa, as we see, you know, the interest in Panzer North Africa and that game success of, you know, the Eastern Front from a tanker standpoint is always very popular. But North Africa is really the area that gamers really enjoy. I think, you know, things aren't so powerful there. And I think you also find there's a much greater balance between the British and the Germans and, you know, even to the Italians somewhat. But, the gamers just like North Africa.
When North Africa first came up as a topic, was that something that you wanted to do that you went to GMT and said, hey, here's what I want to do next? Or was that them suggesting, hey, maybe you should, you know, nudge yourself over in this direction?
Now, I have a good, very good relationship with GMT from the standpoint that they're pretty much interested in whatever I can come up with. Now, today, they very much would like to see an updated version of IDF, which I plan to do and am, you know, some initial work on that, because that also was a very popular title when that came out. So, that they, you know, there's never any demands from them, hey, we have to have this or we have to have that type of thing. But they have, I guess you would say, suggested they'd like to see a version of IDF, which I'd very much like to do also. Definitely is on the drawing board. But Panzer North Africa in the whole series was something I also always wanted to do. So it didn't take any great amount of nudging by them to, you know, want to do the North Africa version.
Yeah, yeah. Folks tend to work best on the things they want to do stuff with, right? I mean, that's...
Oh, absolutely.
So when did the work start on Panzer North Africa, with it being a 2024 release? I mean, obviously, this was a couple of years in the works. Did the work start pre-COVID, or was it post-COVID, or was it during COVID because you needed something to do?
You know, the thoughts and concepts of what to have in it and all that would have even been pre-COVID. But hardcore work on it would have been 3 years or so before you see it published, because of the amount of work that I do. I actually create the tank images. I do all the data cards. I mock up all, you know, most of the maps and that type of thing. I did have the advantage of this with North Africa, working with Fernando. He laid out a lot of the scenarios. He did the basis of the original solitaire system that first appeared in Panzer France.
Okay.
And then adapted it over to Panzer North Africa. And he should get like 95% of the credit for the campaign that's in Panzer North Africa. So when you look at North Africa as a product, I don't think there's anything we could have done to have made it more complete than it is, with the number of scenarios and the fact that it's the Italians are also in there. It's not just the Germans and the British, so you also have the Italians, yep, which I feel is pretty important because, you know, if you just look at the sheer number of troops that were in North Africa, there were more Italians there than there were Germans. I think that's an important element in the game. So that's where I think made a difference, you know, even for the CFSRs, because how complete the game was. You can spend a lot of time with that game. And given the structure and how the scenarios work and all that, the replayability is so broad that, it's really a good value.
Yeah. So you had mentioned you know, doing the artwork yourself, that was one of the other things that I noticed and was going to ask about. There aren't a whole lot of, there are a bunch of designers that do their own artwork, but they're all folks like me that are doing very small press, like borderline vanity press stuff. And most of us aren't very good at it. And that's why, you know, like I don't do it anymore. But folks working for, you know, flagship publishers aren't generally doing their own. It's like you and Mark Simonich. I mean, there's like maybe two other people max that are doing their own artwork on top of their own game design. Did that start out of necessity? Was it you enjoyed the art? Was it just, you know, you couldn't find anybody else to do it?
And I don't want to mislead you in the sense I don't do every piece of art that's in the game. You know, most of the support counters, those I didn't necessarily do. In fact, the originals, all those were done by Mark Simonich for Panzer, and then we moved him over. And so I do the tank images. I have no skill in drawing people or people's faces. So if you look at the images for the leaders and all that, I don't draw those. But, you know, when it comes to tanks and doing the appropriate colors and the camouflage and all that, and part of that was out of necessity because when I first approached publishers with this, I didn't want to go to them with like crayon drawings. You know, you wanted something that looked nice. Okay. Yes. And so that's where that came about. That I wanted a product that was going to have an appeal. And so, and I have no issue doing the tanks and, you know, and all the camo or the colors and all that on those. So, and I do all the layout on the data cards. That's all my work that you see there. So I guess, you know, I'm kind of a obsessive personality type. You know, you want to make sure it's right.
Yeah.
Not that somebody else can't do it correctly, but, you know, it's a control thing, I guess you'd want to say that, you know, that is done. Now, I don't draw the maps. The maps are mocked up and then a real artist does the maps. And I certainly don't lay out the booklets because that is a tedious job. You know, you create the original text in Word and then another individual lays it out in InDesign. So, you know, in doing the games, writing the manuals is probably the most tedious work.
Oh, yeah.
Because tactical games by nature are far more complex than any others. And so you have to account for far more factors from a rule standpoint than you do if you're playing a strategic game, you know, moving divisions around the board kind of thing. And you have to think about, okay, if this happens, what do you do? And then of course, when it was with MDT, it was even more complex, which you're dealing with more sophisticated weapon systems and that type of thing. So, and again, creating an environment that is still fun from a gamer standpoint. So there's a lot that goes into it. You know, like you said, you've done some game stuff and that, you know, people have ideas. Oh yeah, I know, I got a great idea for a game and this way, but taking something from an idea and into the end point of something that is published, it takes a lot of work.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I 100% understand and empathize with the idea that it's very hard to give somebody else some measure of control over what your finished output looks like, because I still have a hard time of letting go of certain things. Mike, you were going to jump in here with something.
Yeah. So Jim, I was curious. You mentioned the solitaire system. I guess that sounds like it was added after your some of the earlier games were released. I guess my question is, was there a demand for a solitaire system from the players, or is this something you decided to add on your own?
No, I think there is a natural demand because, you know, today most games are played solitaire. Unfortunately, there aren't a lot of people that have the opportunity to necessarily get together to play face to face. Those that have that are extremely lucky. So most games are played solitaire. So it was in today's market. Having a solitaire component to a game really helps the sale point for it. Panzer, MBT, you know, aren't bad playing solitaire. but you still don't have that element that the solitaire system provides in the surprise factor or the unexpected factor or what it this really is in that. So it wasn't that, oh, gee, I just wanted to throw a solitaire system together. There really was a call for it, and there is a call for it for games. GMT, as a matter of fact, has a whole group that are focused purely on developing solitaire elements for games that they have.
Yeah.
Now, tactical games, as a rule, don't necessarily lend themselves to that, and games that use cards, even less so. it's a challenge. I think Fernando did a pretty good job, developing the first pass on that, and then we fine tuned it some. And, I think it works pretty well. But there's still a caveat, even with the solitaire, the Panzer solitaire, that if something doesn't seem exactly right, then do something different. Because you really can't factor in all elements into it to make it absolutely correct. So you're still wanting to have a good gaming experience. So if the solitaire is throwing out what really seems a strange command or whatever, well, don't do that one. Do something that makes more sense to you. Because, you're going to improve your game experience, and that's really why you're playing it. So you just cannot come up, especially in a tactical game, you cannot come up with something that is going to control everything you see. You don't have the advantage that computer games do, because they basically cheat. So that's how they get around those things. And how well it cheats is how sophisticated the game is. Because they're not truly developing AI-driven products from 100% of what's going on. It has the advantage that it can cheat a little, whether it's cheating the dice or it's cheating what it knows you're going to do and that type of thing, which in a paper game, you don't have as much of that ability that.
Yeah. So it sounds like your solitaire system, that I know a lot of games will claim they have a solitaire system, but it really isn't what it is. It's more of just a one-off scenario or two that have very specific bot control. But it sounds like yours is a little more than that, where it's you're actually kind of playing the actual game, the actual campaign.
You are playing the actual game. Now, you use the actual scenarios that are made to be played solitaire. You can't take just any scenario. Okay. And use the solitaire system with it. There are scenarios included in the game that are made to be played solitaire. And so, because they have specific how it controls the units on the solitaire side and all that type of thing. So, but it is a true solitaire system. It's not just something slapped on top of a regular scenario. So when you play a solitaire scenario, it's made to be played that way.
Okay. Well, so there's also people like me that don't mind playing two-player games double-handed. So is that something, there's probably a lot of hidden information and stuff, but is it something that you can do solitaire and still get, maybe not the full experience, but still, if you're looking for more narrative play, that you'll still get at least that experience?
I think both the Panzer and MBT series plays pretty well solitaire. You just have to, suspend I'm this side and now I'm this side, when you're trying to, when you're placing commands on that. And again, playing it as straight as you can just improves your game, your fun, your gaming experience for that particular scenario. So they both do pretty well that way, as opposed to like me. That's just not my thing, playing both sides. What am I doing here? That's where like Vassal is very good, because both Panzer and MBT have excellent Vassal modules. You can find a fair number of players on Vassal, and you're sitting across from each other. Although I feel games, at least from Panzer and Matisse standpoint, they play a little better or quicker face-to-face than they do on Vassal, simply because you have the advantage of seeing the entire map board all the time, where on Vassal you tend to have to go around and look different areas and that type of thing. So, But the modules for Panzer and MBT and Panzer North Africa in Basel are excellent, and they're fairly well used also.
Yeah, I've seen posts here and there, you know, around the different social channels of, hey, looking for someone to teach me this game over Basel, or looking for someone to play with. So it's definitely something that folks have asked about and are looking.
Now, Basel is a good teaching tool for the games too, because you can read the rule book all day long, but it's a lot different when somebody's showing you, hey, this is what you do, and this is how you look this up, and this is how these modifiers come into play. It makes a lot more sense from a visual layout standpoint than it does just sitting and reading it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking at Steam right now. Tabletop Simulator also appears to have MBT.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that at all. I don't know who put that together or anything of what it's about. So I couldn't tell you good, bad, or otherwise. As far as that goes. You know, I work directly with the individual who put the modules together for Basel. So, you know, I know what those are about and they're correct and all that. I can't really comment on Tabletop Simulator.
Yeah.
I don't think Tabletop Simulator versus Basel is quite Coke versus Pepsi, but it sometimes seems like it's close.
Basel
on really one side of the camp or the other.
Basel really works well for a Panzer MBT type game, you know, how it manages the game boards and the counters and all that type of thing. And I can't really comment on Tabletop Simulator because I've never played a game on Tabletop Simulator. So I don't know what it is. And Basel, just like I'm sure Tabletop Simulator, is dependent upon the quality of the module.
Exactly.
There's good ones out there and there's probably not so good ones. So it's my comments aren't really, I'm not sitting in judgment of Tabletop Simulator in any way. I just have never played a game on it.
It's a pretty big learning curve to jump in. Once you do, though, honestly, there's advantages and disadvantages to both of those systems. But
Well, and there's research to back up the fact that once you learn the interface, like how to manipulate Basel itself, how to manipulate tabletops, you know, but that's true of anything. Once you learn the interface of, you know, how to do a desktop publishing program, once you learn the interface of, you know, one of the Civ series, you know, computer games, at that point, you're not fighting the interface anymore, right? At that point, you're playing the game that you're, or whatever task it is that you were meant to do. There's actual research backing that stuff up, that you can either spend your time learning the interface and the UI and the buttonology, or you can spend your time playing the game. But it's very hard to do both at the same time.
And I've read comments where Tabletop Simulator does a very good job with the interface and the tools and that type of thing. But there's only so many hours in a day.
Absolutely.
You have a life besides games, or at least my wife expects me to. So,
Season 15 of Mentioned in Dispatches is graciously supported by all of our Patreon members, but especially our regimental patrons who supported us at the top level. The Armchair Dragoons would like to thank Miles R., James M., Kevin Bertram, Catastrophe Games, Fred and his dog, Joseph Knorr, Patrick Geraghty, Michael Sunborg, Stagger Wing, and Paul LaFontaine. Wargaming is our jam, and they help us spread it. You too can support the Regiment of Strategy Gaming as a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
You mentioned your wife. Your wife is in the newspaper article that the Toledo Blade published about you. And, you know, it was after the CSR, so it was noting that you were now an award-winning board game designer with a War Game of the Year under your belt. But how did that come about? Was it, you know, you had a friend that threw that over to them? Did your wife, like, you know, is it somebody that she hangs out with on the side, member of the church or, you know, whatever? Or how did that happen to come together?
Winning was a real important thing to me. I'd been nominated before a few times, and reaching that milestone was pretty significant. And she saw that. And so she actually contacted the Blade and said, you know, this might be an interesting personal interest story, given that here we had moved away. I had gotten a job in healthcare administration in the Baltimore area. That's why we moved away. And you know, we've come back and done all this kind of game stuff and then winning these awards. And the person she had contacted at the Blade, one of their staff writers, she had actually written an article previously about gaming in the area. So it was someone that had the knowledge of games and or gaming and that type of thing. And so she contacted her and said, hey, maybe you'd be interested in this story. Here's kind of the background. The author was, and she came out and met with us a few times and talked about all those things you see was written. And my wife and I both think that she did a terrific job writing the article. She really captured the essence of the story and the backstory. And that little story that Mary shared about when I first got together with her and I had a secret to share with her and that type of thing. So, yeah, all that is true. And so she kind of, my wife really surprised me when she had made that contact and then they were interested. And it was very flattering, obviously. And I really enjoyed the opportunity.
Well, it jumped out because you don't often see hobby games at all, much less war games specifically, covered in general media. And so when I saw that, whoa, this is, and again, I have a journalism background, so these kinds of things jump out to me when they do happen. I made sure that was absolutely included in our weekly Tuesday Newsday that we put together. That was one of the bigger stories of the week. Hey, by the way, this cool thing happened where we actually got mentioned in, you know, the real media and in a non-disparaging, non-embarrassing way, which was the other big bonus, you know.
Lillian, the author, she really had good insight into gaming. Now, her gaming background was more in, I would say, sci-fi and maybe even more on the computer side of things, but she's shared with us that her boyfriend plays GURPS. You know, she said, hey, have you ever heard of GURPS? And I said, yeah, I've heard of GURPS. And not necessarily something I play, but I've certainly heard of GURPS. And so she obviously sold the story to the newspaper that, hey, this would really be something interesting. And also for, they'd moved away, they moved back, you know, there's a local connection, you know, all that kind of thing. And so that I think really made a difference in seeing the article published. And because you're absolutely right, you don't see most mainstream media going out of the way to talk about this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's too warfare-y or, you know, whatever. And so, which is not the point at all, but, that's, again, I was very fortunate that was published.
Yeah, it was a very nice article. I enjoyed reading it. It wasn't huge, but it was appropriate for what they were covering. I thought they did a great job of it. And I really wish we could get more things like that show up in just the general media of, hey, here's a neat thing somebody did in their, you know, in their corner of the hobby, because it was a neat thing you did. And it was nice that they found a way to cover it. Like I said, in a non-embarrassing or disparaging or dumbed down sort of way that they weren't talking down to folks. They weren't making it seem like it was, some weird little sideshow, that this was meaningful and relevant. That was cool. That was cool.
And again, I complimented her a great deal. She did a terrific job writing the article and capturing the essence of the points that were really important.
Yeah. So, because it's not here yet, talk to us about the next game here. We've got art coming up. What's the story behind art? Because this is not, you know, historical tank stuff. This is something really different from the other things you've done.
How do you go from naval to tanks to science fiction tactical?
Yeah, the concept of ARC I've been kicking around for a long time. It goes back to, I'd say, the late 90s. The thought of ARC, in my mind, originally was potentially a computer game, but when I got out of that business, thankfully, I decided that, it could possibly work as a board game. And so I decided, well, you know, let me see. It's one of these things, at least for me, where you kind of do a little and then you set it aside and then you come back and you do a little more. And so the work in earnest on ARC started probably in 2020. So okay. Before COVID hit, that's when I initially proposed the concept to GMT. Would you be interested in something like this? Here's my ideas behind it. Here's kind of the basis of it. You know, I would use blocks because GMT doesn't do figures. So you kind of work with that. So it still creates a 3D visual. It's not just flat counters for some of the things. And here's the thought behind it. And again, with my mind, it was doing something that hasn't been done 100 times before. So yeah, there's lots of sci-fi games and there's lots of skirmish level sci-fi games, and not necessarily where you have troops today dealing with, say, aliens that are actually terrestrial aliens. So it's not so futuristics because the weapons the ARC operators use are weapons that exist today, not, you know, 100 years in the future.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always say about sci-fi as compared to fantasy, sci-fi is real in a sense that what was sci-fi, say, in the 1930s, you know, a great deal of that is real today.
Yep.
typically, sci-fi is based on something in reality. And so, you know, you can relate to it, even though, yeah, there's aliens, but, you know, it's still something in reality. So the whole idea of ARC, it's still a tactical game. I do tactical games. That's what I design. It is a skirmish level, so it's even more tactical than Panzer MBT, since it's man to thing. And so it's been something I've wanted to do for a long time. And so I finally had enough time. COVID kind of threw a wrench into things because you couldn't do any real face-to-face playing with it. I really focused on getting the Vassal module for it done. I always use Vassal for playtesting, whether it's Panzer MBT or any of the games. ARC had the Vassal much more front-end loaded in getting that in place because that was the only way to play it initially. And so I think today we're on the 56th version of the module. So it has gone through tremendous changes. Now, some of that might just be a little tweak here or there, but it has gone through a lot of changes.
Yeah, that's a lot for a 20-year-old game, much less a 5-year-old one.
So what ARC looks like today is completely different from when I started putting things together. So I've always enjoyed sci-fi, even though I haven't done any other sci-fi games. I enjoy playing sci-fi. And so that's really how that came about.
So what level are we at here in this system? Or you said it's tactical. So is this like XCOM where you're individual soldiers or a little bit higher up than that?
No, it's individual characters. So it's individual human operators, ARC operators versus individual alien characters.
Okay.
So
I think that's actually very interesting. I think it adds more to your immersion when you're playing these things, actually.
Yeah, it's I guess, as tactical as you can get. So
yeah, you're not talking Mike out of this at all.
No, I'm looking to see where I can pre-order. Yeah.
it's been a little slow in the sense that it's like your question. People don't necessarily know everything what it's about. So I've been writing articles and I put together some art banners, I call them, so people can see some of the stuff, what it's about. And there's a Thursday, there'll be more information coming out, a couple more banners, a couple more articles. So I'm trying to stage it out so people, you know, it's just not, you know, it's not like, okay, here's the rule book, you know, look through it or something. It's more talking about the different facets of the game so people can really get an understanding of what it's about. And sure, I mean, people know other games I've done, but this is not necessarily this game. And, you know, with what things cost today, I don't think everybody's just going to slap out money for something they don't have necessarily any idea what it's about. So,
yeah, it does seem a little off the beaten path for what folks would normally expect from you, given the track record there. But, you know, look, follow your muse, right? I mean, this is something cool you'd been wanting to do. was there not necessarily a specific sci-fi franchise that directly inspired, but are there, whether it was a book or a movie or a TV show or anything, was there a particular feel that you were sort of after that people might be able to use as a point of comparison for what you're doing here? It's you've mentioned it's sort of grounded in today's reality, so we're not on other planets, you know, 600 years from now or anything. This is here on Earth, the, you know, hidden among us, although under us really, but you know, is there a point of comparison people can use as a relation point to jump off from?
You know, Mike mentioned XCOM, and I had the benefit of, I was working for MicroProse at the time the first XCOM came out, and that was a designed by a British guy who approached MicroProse about doing XCOM and releasing it as a broad game. And so that one, and then Terror from the Deep. Then the new XCOMs have come out subsequent to that. So, you know, XCOM is a skirmish level single figure versus aliens type thing. So if you were to say, is there anything that's probably the closest you might see out there as far as from a scale and what you're dealing with, that's probably it. As far as the story goes, I can't say I've necessarily, you know, I read this book and, oh, okay, well, I'll just use that. It's just sort of an idea I came up with that I thought might be interesting. And like I said, back in the late 90s as initially potentially as a video game, but then no, just going as a board game. But it's really looking at topics that haven't already been done many times already.
Yeah. So, well, that's why I was mentioning sort of the feel of things. And, you know, XCOM's probably a good comparison point given the scale and the sort of holistic view there. Mm-hmm. Is the sequel already on the drawing board for what comes next for ARK? Is there?
I have an idea for something, you know, that would be the next expansion kind of thing. And it would be focusing more on a solitaire experience. You can't. Can you play ARK solitaire? Yeah. I mean, you can play any game solitaire. But again, you have both sides. You have cards in that. The cards are, it's a card assist game. You don't play cards to play the game. You play cards to enhance certain elements. So maybe you have a card that's going to make this particular shot better, but you don't have to play the card. You may not even have a card kind of thing. So playing solitaire, you've got two different hands of cards. Initially in the game, the units are hidden from us in the sense that you still have blocks that are on the map, but you don't know what characters they necessarily represent, and some of them are fakes also. So if you're playing solitaire, you obviously know what everything is and where it is. So so that makes it a little more of a challenge. So looking at a potential expansion, it would be the ARK force dealing with a more mindless group of people that you're having to deal with. So you can play truly as a solitaire. But I didn't see that. Yeah, I didn't see that as an initial jump off point for the game, at least from my experience. You know, I really wanted something that two players could play and really enjoy, from playing either side.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now I'm wondering if it would work as a double blind. Want to set up an Origins and run a double line.
I don't know what the moderator would actually do. You still have both sides. Panzer and MBT play very well as double blind games, but I don't know that ARK would necessarily lend itself to that.
It sounds like it's baked into it already, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you're already both sides when you initially start a scenario, depending on who sets up on the map and who on the other side is entering, and things are unknown. That I don't know what a moderator would necessarily do. It's really both sides would manage, their own force. And being a card assist game, you have cards and playing solitaire becomes a little more of a challenge. But good solitaire players can make any game play well solitaire. So.
Absolutely. I've been saying that for a long, long time, as Brent will tell you.
And, we can't get him to stop talking about it.
And you could certainly play art that way. And, you know, it's if you have the right mind about it to make it fair to both sides, you can have a good game.
There are soldiers in this, and will there be tanks in this? Will there be air units? No. Alien spaceships?
No, there's the
battleships underground.
Now the aliens they're great at genetic manipulation, so they created large, based on insects that they've grown to the size of a bus that. That they utilize. And so you could say that's kind of tankish, but the human force, they don't come in with any heavy weapons in that. That's really not in their ROE. They're really initially coming in here because communication's been lost with this particular small town, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. Okay. And so they don't know what to expect. So you're not rolling in with a bunch of Abrams coming down the street. and this is an ARC light team. So it's just these guys and their weapons. Now you have grenades and all that kind of thing. And so, you do get the experience of the all those types of weapons. And of course, the aliens have their forms of grenades too. So I think it really plays well if you approach it from a real skilled tactical sense, and that you understand the approaching the tactics. You know, cover's your friend, concealment's your friend, walking down the street in the open is not your friend. And yeah. So you really have to look at it tactically as to how best to approach it. Now, the forces are dissimilar in their weapons and things that they have. So you're not playing two sides of the same thing. The aliens are different, how they function, the types of weapons they have. I mean, they're not firing ray guns at you type of thing. They're most sophisticated. Weapons are rail guns. And so, they have some advantages, and so do the humans over them. So part of it is initially in the game is learning how those things work and interact with each other and approaching your tactics from that. The game has 13 scenarios. You can, of course, play any scenario you want, but the campaign game is playing scenario 1 through 13 in that order, because you start in the town of Crawford. Then you go below into the sewers below it, and then the final scenarios are actually in the lair of the res themselves. So but again, you can start with any scenario you want just to see what that's about. But the campaign game is played from scenario 1 through 13 in that order.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go!
As we start to wind down the time here on Mention and Dispatches, looking back again over the previous stuff you've done, you've held fairly tightly to the Panzer franchise. That pretty much any of the Panzer stuff that's come out has had your fingerprints all over it. Is that something that you've had some co-designers? Is that something that you'd let somebody just sort of grab and, all right, go do the Philippines or what, grab something out of the blue or something that maybe you don't have the time or particular inclination to deal with? And said, I want to do this.
Fernando is the first person I worked with on the games. I don't know that you'll see anybody else. So okay. If somebody approached me and said, hey, I'd like to do, like you said, Panzer in the Philippines, I'd say, well, no, I don't think so. any Panzer MBT game, IDF, whatever, will have my hand on it. I've spent a good part of my lifetime committed to this whole series, and that's not something just, hey, you can have it, go ahead, kind of thing.
Absolutely. It's interesting because there are some designers that, that's my baby and I'm the one going to raise it. And that's you and Panzer. That's, Mark and his series of the 40, the 40 something series of World War II games. Whereas, you see Volko with the coin games, like he did a couple of them. He's like, all right, I'm good. The rest of you guys can take it from here. And he moved on to do something else. And there's still people building coin games that just don't have Volko involved. And so there's folks that go in both directions, and I just wasn't sure which side of that divide you fell on. I totally get it. That's your baby, and it's hard to let go, and I respect that. I totally understand that. That like you said, you've spent a good chunk of your life doing this. That it's hard to let somebody else in.
and I don't know, at least as far as my opinion goes, I don't know, say, look at Panzer. Panzer in the Pacific would not be a great game. Tanks versus the Japanese not a great game.
I only brought up the Pacific because that's something that's always Mike's baby, so I knew I'd get his ear.
But I know enough to know that that's a completely different style of war in the Pacific.
Absolutely.
Combat Commander's done a great job with all the Pacific and all that kind of thing. Now, there are some smaller nation tanks and, that kind of thing that even in Europe that, I don't know how much interest people are going to have in this Romanian tank or, this Polish tank yet. Kind of thing. I just don't. I don't see much value in that. At least that's my opinion. Now MBT, that's a different story. People are always approaching me about, hey, you need to do one, about the Ukrainian war going on right now and this and that. Well, the challenge from the technology is one thing, but I've always had a philosophy that I'll never design anything where people are in warfare today. That's not going to happen. That's what caused my falling out with Avalon Hill, because when the first Gulf War happened, they wanted me to design a variation on IDF that was for the Gulf War, and I told them I wouldn't do it. And because I'm not going to do something where people are fighting today, that's not what I'm about. And they said, well, okay, well, then we won't do any of your games anymore. I said, okay, well, that's how it is. So, and I, the technology of a modern game would be really challenging from a true tactical level. And I don't know where it comes to how much fun that necessarily would be. That's, there's other areas in the MBT world, even in that time frame, that, you got Indo-Pakistan and all that kind of thing that, still could be interesting. How about Korea? And, that's not necessarily, but it still was much more of an infantry focused situation than tanks. There were tanks there. There were certainly more than with us and the Japanese. But there's possibilities. But I kind of hang on to things pretty tight. So
I get it.
If somebody comes out with their Panzer, then let me know because I'll want to have a chat with them.
So that I'm guessing then you had mentioned much earlier in the conversation the possibility of circling back around to IDF and updating that. I'm assuming that that would be updating the game but still dealing with the 56, 67, 73 conflicts, nothing current day based on the philosophy that you just articulated of. I'm not getting involved in current events.
Yeah, because the original IDF was only 67 and 73, but in the new version we are going to have some 56 stuff in there. Because most of the vehicles and all that were still the same that you saw in 67. So
there's still Sherman tanks running around out there.
So that would really work pretty well. And there's a couple of scenarios that that would work well with that. I'm also planning to work with Fernando on the new IDF. He really does a great job. And I've enjoyed my experience working with him. And he's also very interested. So that's, in this stuff, if it's not something you're interested in, it's going to show out in which you come up with an end product. That's why, I don't necessarily have 100 titles that I've published. It really becomes a labor of love to produce a good I feel.
I think that's something that's definitely changed in the wargaming business from 50 years ago to today, is that the idea of the in-house designer, right, the design staff that are full-time employees at a particular publisher, is not the norm the way it was in the 70s and early 80s. That's just we're in a different world these days.
Absolutely right.
Folks sell their games to publishers, but they don't work for the publisher. Yeah,
it's very much, I feel like, the book business nowadays. You write a book and you work with a publisher. Because, at least for me, and that's what made it really hard when I was in the computer game business, it was difficult to go in and it was like, okay, I'm going to be creative today. it's much easier now where, I can work on something because, I feel like it today but tomorrow I just don't have any ideas. So, and that's me. Now other people may not be the same, but I tend to be much more successful when you let things lay and then you come back to it, maybe make a few notes and think about it a while kind of thing. So yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't see that really working much today. Now there are computer game companies that still do that model.
Yep.
They have different individuals that focus on different concept, different titles and that. So, but again, those people, they come and go when you get somebody new and then you work on, you know, this kind of thing. So, but that was a tough business. I was happy, like I said, to leave that behind.
Yeah. I have some friends that still work in the business. My next door neighbor actually works for Epic Games. He's not in the game design side of things. He's in the administration of things, but I've met a variety of people over the years that work in the computer game business still. And I'm friends with a good number of them, and I think they're all nuts. They're lovely people, but man, I just couldn't do that for a living. I just, the design part of it is the cool part of it. It's all the stuff that's wrapped around it that I think would just drive me batty.
Yeah, it was very cutthroat, at least where I was. The head of the company really felt pitting people against each other created a good work environment. I don't know where he got that idea. And, you know, people didn't cooperate with each other. You know, you couldn't bounce ideas off of somebody without, you know, the next day you'd see something submitted with their name on it that it was your idea. And so it just became toxic from that standpoint. So I wasn't unhappy to, I actually left that and went back into healthcare before I retired. So it was enjoyable.
Kind of fun.
I really got to go to some really interesting places when we were doing the games, out to Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, went to Fort Rucker out on the USS America aircraft carriers. So I got to really see some stuff, work with guys in the military who were all terrific, all really interested in working with you, wanted, really appreciated, you know, you showing things in a good light. It's kind of like you're saying about publishing articles and it's not negative kind of thing. And so it was that, from that standpoint, it was really enjoyable seeing all that real stuff and getting up and sitting in real planes. And I remember we were doing an F-15, this is in MicroProse, an F-15E Strike Eagle game. And we actually had the unclassified versions of the operator manuals for all the equipment and that. And I remember this aircraft was on the ground at the time, and I got in the back seat and everything was powered up. So I was able to bring up all the displays and set them up. And guys looking at me like, how do you know how to do all that stuff here? And I said, well, you know, I just read the manuals. And so it was pretty interesting stuff. And that's what I appreciated, their willingness to share with you. And you certainly realize that, at least on land, that the Air Force looked a lot better than the Navy. So, you know, the Navy's money was all out at sea, where the Air Force was living large on their bases. So
one of my best friends from childhood, we both joined the military out of college. He joined the Air Force and was a weather guy and retired after 22 years or so. And I used to give him a hard time all the time that you're not in the military, you're in the Air Force. And then, of course, he's the guy that deploys. I ended up not deploying. He's the guy that gets to go spend 6 months in Afghanistan. So,
yeah, there is some truth to that. You know, we pull into Seymour Johnson, and there's a couple golf courses and all this type of thing. And, you know, we're in Norfolk at the Naval Base, and we go into the squadron shack, and it's all this beat up old furniture and broken down chairs and, you know, this kind of stuff. And so you saw that there was a difference.
Mike, closing shots, man.
Well, just one quick question, because I know the listeners are going to want to know this. You said you worked MicroProse. It sounds like pretty early on. So did you ever run across Sid Meier?
Yeah, Sid was there when he was still at MicroProse when I was there.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
Because he and Bill Staley originally started the company together. Yeah. And so I worked with MicroProse from 90 through 96. So Sid was there all that time. And that's when he was doing the first iterations of Civilization.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, he was there.
Cool. So I guess, and then the other question would be, now we know that, ARC is coming out, not out yet, but looking even further down the road, is there anything that's maybe revisiting the naval stuff at some point, or maybe even doing just a different era in wargaming? Got anything that's just starting to come to mind?
I don't
that you can talk about.
I don't necessarily have any new naval thoughts. They had asked if I thought about, because of Kaiser Pirates was German Raiders of War One, about doing Raiders of War Two, but that was a completely different world by the time it got to World War Two. Raider. And so naval wise, I don't really have anything specific about that. You know, I always have ideas go through my head, but we're going to do an expansion for Panzer North Africa and Tunisia, which brings the Americans into the game. And so that we're definitely doing. And of course, the new version of IDF. But beyond that, I don't necessarily have, well, here's my next great idea. I don't have that.
All right. Sir, we're a little over an hour as we are recording this. By the time I edit out, you know, as I've joked, by the time I edit out me saying, we will be able to shave 5 minutes off of this thing easy. But we do appreciate you taking the time this evening to chat with us. And as always, we appreciate the audience taking the time to spend with us listening to all of this. Whether you're doing it at regular speed or at like 1.2 to get it over with faster, we definitely appreciate you guys being here listening to us. So this was great. This is the first time we've ever talked to you. I really appreciate you you being here. I've loved the games for a long time. And, you know, again, more on the modern side for me because that's my shtick. But, you know, I definitely appreciate the care and the craft that have gone into the Panzer series over all the years as well. So thank you for many hours of enjoyable board gaming. I do appreciate it.
Well, Brant and Mike, I've enjoyed it very much. I appreciate it talking to both of you. If you ever want to invite me back, I'd be happy to do it.
I'm sure we will find time in the schedule. Maybe after ARC is out, we'll come back and get you again with, all right, so where's the sequel? Because that's all everybody's worried about, right, is what's next. Now, because I know Mike's going to want to play with this one a whole bunch, so we'll let him do most of the questions next time.
This one and then Terror from the Underworld is next.
Yeah. There we go, Terror from the Underworld, yeah.
So, audience, thank you for joining us. It's, you know, again, we're past the halfway point of season 15, but we've still got some more to go. We've still got a couple of designers we're going to bring you. And like I said, we've still got that last episode that we've normally done sort of a holiday look forward kind of thing. We've done that like 4 years in a row now, so it's starting to get a little stale. So, Mike, I think we might do something a little wacky and like open up a thread the week before we record it on the social channels and turn it into like an AMA sort of thing, right? We'll let other people ask us questions and we'll try to answer them and see if that goes anywhere. I'm workshopping this in real time. I don't know if we'll do that, but it's an idea. We appreciate everybody who was listening and thank you very much, and we'll catch you next time on another episode of Mentioning Dispatches.